Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We'll be escorting you through the battle space of the War of Ideas. We've got a terrific lineup today, and I'm not going to take time from our first guest to go through it with you, but you're going to want to catch the entire hour, starting with the first batter up, Tom Trento. He is the driving force behind a terrific organization, the United West. And Tom, you have been doing incredible work raising the alarm about jihad and the impetus behind it, Sharia, through the United West and an organization you've also been running, the Florida Security Council. Tell us what your immediate reaction is to the takedown of one of the most wanted terrorist, jihadist, Sharia adherent proponents, Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen today.
Frank, I was up early this morning, saw the breaking news, and threw my hands to the sky and said, "Thank you, Allah." The death of this U.S. American citizen breaks new ground. We're now going after American citizens who have violated the Constitution and turned their sword against us. That's good. But the warning, I think, for everyone is that that this guy is simply one of the actors of a network. The network is there. The jihadis have a world vision. They'll step in and fill his place. He's charismatic and he's a holy man, but more are coming his way. We've got to attack the philosophical systems, the theocratic system of Sharia Islam in order to start bringing down the Anwars of the world.
Yeah. Speaking of exponents of that view and the danger that they represent, you got your hands on the indictment of a chap by the name of Rezwan Ferdows, who was picked up by the FBI earlier this week in connection with a so-called homegrown terrorist plot, what some have called a self-radicalized individual here in the United States. What does the indictment tell us, both about the impetus behind his efforts to attack us, and also what does it tell us about the limits on what we're able to see and say about these sorts of characters?
Yeah, the indictment, if a unschooled reader goes through the indictment, you get a very interesting process of the FBI following this individual and documenting every single step. But if that untrained
remind
person...
Remind us what the plot involved, Tom.
The plot was fascinating. He was taking model airplanes that were 7 feet long with a 5-foot wingspan, a 25-pound payload, and programming them through sophisticated GPS equipment to fly from the tidal basin, essentially East Potomac Park, over the Potomac, right in Washington, D.C., right into the Pentagon, and also right into the dome of the U.S. Capitol. This is not, Frank, you know, the Obama administration's view of some poor chap in the middle of a third world country. This is a 26-year-old physicist from Boston, a graduate of Northeastern, a prestigious school.
And he was described in that indictment, both in his own words and by the FBI agent filing it, in words that make it very clear he was all about jihad and the murder of kafirs, the unbelievers, and serving Allah. And yet, Tom, one of our colleagues, Claire Lopez, observed that there was no mention made throughout of Islam and or Sharia as, impetuses behind all this. To what do you attribute that seeming oversight?
The oversight is attributed to the CYA policy of the FBI. It should be the FCYBIA. is what it should be, you know?
So this is just a little too politically sporty. Frankly, I was surprised to see even as much reference to the jihadism and so on, which is, of course, intimately, inextricably tied to Sharia. Tell us how this fits into the larger problem, Tom Trento of the United West is our guest, the larger problem of curbing the training that is being given to not just policy agencies in the United States government, but even law enforcement and intelligence agencies that are presumably our first line of defense against jihadists and other Sharia adherent threats.
What I'm going to tell you right now is for your listeners, a serious national security breach. But it's a fact of reality. Recently, I sat down with a friend. He and I graduated high school together. I went off into crazy activism. He went into the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He retired out at 55 and then was hired back. And he was one of their counterterrorism experts in the FBI. And he told me point blank, sitting across from dinner, he said the FBI is being run by lawyers. Everything we do has to go through legal. We do not want to be sued by these various Muslim organizations every day of the week. This is the state of affairs. So if you take that filter through which the Federal Bureau of Investigation launches investigations and prosecutes people, you cripple and limit the capability of the very good agents that want to fight terrorism and save America. Then you have all these policies of vetting out people that speak clearly about the threat assessment of Sharia Islam. The whole thing's a mess. We've got to change the administration, change the leadership, put people in that understand the threat assessment of Sharia Islam, and start getting this country back to a sane view of fighting crime and terrorism.
Yeah. The thing that's scary, Tom, that I know you are as worried about as I am, is that we've had in recent days this kind of, they call it political correct. I think of it as submissive approach taken at the hands of the White House to force all agencies of the United States government, anybody who's taking federal money for training in the counterterrorism business, to seek and obtain approval for their training programs from the Department of Homeland Security, whose advisory board in determining what kind of training is okay and what kind is not, what can be said and what cannot be said and the like, seems to be heavily populated by people tied, amazingly, folks, to Muslim Brotherhood Front organizations. One of our colleagues in our Team B report, Tom, you were a very important contributor to that effort, the Sharia, the Threat to America book. Stephen Coughlin was made persona non grata, as they say, unable to provide training to an intelligence agency, the CIA, at the direction of this this policy diktat. And I just wonder quickly what you make of that, and specifically the question of whether or not it's a real breach to have the policy types clearly under the sway of the Obama administration and its sympathy for the Brotherhood on the one hand, telling those who are responsible in literally the front lines of freedom from keeping them from knowing or finding out the full unvarnished truth wherever they may find it.
It's pretty simple, Frank. When you take that oath to defend the U.S. Constitution, you assume a moral and a legal obligation, and when you are derelict in the legal part, there is in U.S. law a doctrine known as misprision of treason, which says you as a sworn officer ought to know better and function better. So we need to hold accountable those officers in DHS, in the DOD, that are involved with the Muslim Brotherhood. But when I run around the country, and I'm sure when you do, and you reveal to Tea Party people or Jewish or Christian groups or patriotic groups the plan of the Muslim Brotherhood, which includes an infiltration of the government of the United States. And then when we connect that big dot to Washington, D.C., and show the named people in the various departments, the eyes open up and the, oh, my God, what's going on, senses in the audience, and people are starting to awaken to this, and that's our job.
That's our job indeed. Tom Trento, specifically, that's your job at a terrific organization. You've started the United West. We look forward to hearing more about that, and specifically, I want to track some of the videos that you have been obtaining from presidential candidates calling for the prosecution of the Muslim Brotherhood front organizations in America. Vitally important work. Tom, keep it up. Keep coming back to us, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Victor Davis Hanson, getting the historian's perspective of what is happening with this Arab Spring business and what it might mean for our interests in the Middle East and our security here at home. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back with one of the featured attractions, as far as I'm concerned, here at Secure Freedom Radio. Not as often as much as I'd like, but from time to time, we are graced by the presence of Victor Davis Hanson, I believe one of our time's most eminent and thoughtful historians and strategists, both in terms of observing and teaching and counseling as to the practice of strategy. And Victor, you are the author, I'm told, of a staggering 17 books, including The Father of Us All, War and History, Ancient and Modern. You also serve as the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Residence and Classics and Military History at the esteemed Hoover Institution. Thank you so much for joining us and bringing all of that to bear on some of the historically momentous developments of our time. And I'm anxious to cover as many of them with you as we can in the brief segment we have.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start, if we can, with the Middle East, Victor. We've got what we're told is the the triumph of the Democracy Project, Arab Spring, the evolution away from authoritarianism to a brave new order there. How do you see it? And more importantly, I guess if you could crystal ball gaze with me a little bit, how do you think historians are going to see it looking back on it all?
Well, we know what starts wars in the Middle East and when they end. Unfortunately, when the Arab neighbors of Israel believe they can win, they go to war, and when they think they're going to lose, they stop. So we haven't had we've had a war in 2006, 1982, 73, 67, and last big one was in 73, and that was when Israel was surrounded before the Camp David Accords by a hostile Syria and a hostile Egypt. Now we're seeing Islamist movements rising in Egypt, and with the Mubarak government's gone, it looks like all of the dictators, nobody's friends, are going to be gone. And what follows, we're not sure, but we know one thing, it's going to be as hostile or more hostile to Israel. The other thing that's a little different than the last 30 years, the periphery was always either indifferent to Israel, or if they were hostile, they didn't take an active part. Today, Pakistan hosts most of the really dangerous terrorists in the world, and they're mostly anti-Israeli. We got Iran, that used to be under the Shah, a semi-ally of Israel, now threatening its destruction with nuclear weapons almost. That's the implicit message from it. And then we have Turkey, which used to be a strong Israeli ally, now angling for some type of confrontation in the Eastern Mediterranean. And then you see the world is more dependent on oil than ever before, and the oil exporting Gulf states are hostile to Israel, either using capital for their to aid their enemies or making conditions on the sale of their oil. So you put all that together, and you ask yourself, what stopped a war under those conditions? And it was always strong assurances from the United States. There was no light between Israel, so to speak, and America, and therefore nobody tried to exploit that. That's, I think, different now due to the Obama administration's outreach to the Muslim world, and especially its out-of-the-gates attack on Israel. So it's all volatile now, and nobody really knows what happens. But I think very few people think it's more stable than it was 3 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know if you're prepared to make book on this, Victor Davis Hanson, but I'm given to saying I think the prospects, as you said in your piece at Tribune Media and National Review Online, the next war against Israel is no longer a matter of if, only when, that it could very easily be within the year, that what we're seeing, as you say, in the way of these dynamics and the volatility and the perceptions, perhaps misperceptions.
I think that's the important thing. If Hamas, for example, thought that they could send rockets into Israel again, and then people in the West Bank thought they could, and then Syria into this turmoil thought they could, and then Hezbollah thought they could, and then Egypt joined that, and then people like the Iranians thought they could, and Turkey would then be a guarantor. That's eminently feasible. And what would stop all that is for the United States to say, we warn you not to do that. But you don't get the impression that this administration either can or would say something like that. But more importantly, would not. And then people think, well, if we go and do something to Israel and test it, the world will be on our side, the UN will be on our side, and now maybe the United States will be indifferent at best.
Yeah. At least it will not come sufficiently quickly to the aid of Israel to avoid the problem that Golda Meir pointed out to President Nixon some years ago, as I'm sure you know, Victor Davis Hanson, far better historian than I, when that was when offered security guarantees by the president, told him, the problem with your security guarantees, Mr. President, is by the time you get here, we won't be here. And if anything, I'm afraid that's even more true today. Victor, let me ask you, speaking of the daylight and the perceptions of daylight between the United States and Israel, whether it's true or not, to what extent do you think the president's remarks at the United Nations last week ameliorated the situation at all? Was it designed to do so? Was it remotely convincing?
Oh, yeah, it was a campaign speech to be, you know, it's a New York or Florida campaign speech. And people in Israel were quite amazed because it was nothing like he'd said before. The problem with all of that is that it seems insincere, because if you have a narrative for 3 years and then you're told that it's losing you political support, then you suddenly shift it. And he's done that on the economy, on issues like taxes, on energy, campaign finance reform, the Bush-Cheney anti-terrorism nexus. Then it gives us, it cements this impression that anything on any given day is up for discussion. So even though Israel liked it, I think people in Israel and people around Israel thought, well, what if the political dynamics change? What if he were to be elected and didn't need the Jewish vote anymore? Would he go back to his original stance in 2009? I think everybody knows that he would.
Yeah. Well, worse yet, I'm afraid he may be already back to it, given that the pressure is on against about settlements at the moment. Victor, let me switch gears with you, if I may. And again, our guest is Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, also a weekly columnist for the marvelous National Review Online and Tribune Media, China. Our friend John Bolton and one of his colleagues, Dan Blumenthal, have recently written in the Wall Street Journal a very sobering piece about what China is up to in the Western Pacific and really, for that matter, more broadly, warning against specifically the idea that a law of the sea treaty will stave off Chinese hegemonism or imperialism, whatever you want to call it. Where, as a historian, do you think China is headed, and what should we be doing, treaties or naval buildups or otherwise, to try to deal with what it may become yet?
China is doing a lot what Japan was doing in the 1930s when it was industrializing, expanding its fleet, and sending a message to people in Korea, in China, Japan was, and the Philippines, that the United States, mired in depression and isolated, was going to withdraw or wouldn't be around, and therefore it was time to do business with the Japanese.
And then on Japan's terms, yeah.
On Japan's terms. So I think what China is saying is that the United States is receding like it did in the 1930s, and we're the new Japan. And so if you're in the Philippines or you're in South Korea or if you're in Taiwan or any of these areas that are key, Japan, then you better start dealing with us on our terms. If you're worried about regional issues, if you're worried about North Korea, if you're worried about us, if you're worried about Russia, whatever your security apprehensions are.
Access to resources, even.
Access to resources. The United States either won't or can't be around anymore, and we're the new ascendant power, and it's in decline. And I think you're going to start to see a lot of accommodation on the part of a lot of our former friends, especially since this administration feels that defense spending and global commitments to allies are sort of passe. They're 19th century, and we're in a new multipolar world in which the United States isn't particularly exceptional. That's the message that we've given. And so I think we're kind of also like 1979 when Carter, for most of 77 and 78, promised a new U.S. foreign policy that didn't have inordinate fear of communism, et cetera, multilateralism. And suddenly the Chinese went into Vietnam. The Afghans were invaded by the Russians. We had hostages taken in Tehran. There were communist intrusions in Central America. All that happened in 79 because people, it took them 2 years to size up what the United States would do. I think they've sized Obama up, and now it's time to cash in your chips.
It's a very dangerous world, in other words. Victor Davis Hanson, your perspective on it is deeply appreciated. I hope we'll get you back on very soon. Thank you for this insight, and keep up the great work at the Hoover Institution and through your other outlets. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Next up, we will be talking with Roger Noriega about the Latin America piece of all this trouble. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think here at Secure Freedom Radio. Leave your comments or questions for us at 1-800-332-7131. That's 1-800-332-7131.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, short day.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Immunicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back once again joined by one of our duty experts on this hemisphere. He is Roger Noriega, former U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of American States and Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, a position we are going to be talking with him about momentarily. Roger, you have been working of late with the American Enterprise Institute, where you're a visiting fellow. You have also spawned a terrific website, interamericansecuritywatch.org, I believe it is, .com,
yes.
Maybe both.
.com.
And you have been following this story of Hugo Chavez's mortality, shall we say, to the point where apparently he's actually taking note of your interest in it. tell us what the latest is on the best bit of good news coming out of the hemisphere at the moment, namely that he may not be with us long.
Well, it's my sources still confirm that he's not responding well to the chemo at all. Not as well as they'd hoped. He's telling people that he's on the upswing. And the fact is, there's a lot of speculation about his health. Rumors that he was hospitalized last night proved to be unfounded because he was out playing softball with his ministers today. Unfortunately for him, softball and fresh air does not cure cancer. And we need to get prepared for a post-Chavez world, in my view, because if my sources prove to be correct, we have less than a year. He's not going to make it to the October 2012 elections. So we have to be dealing with a regime that's trying to cling to power in spite of elections that are scheduled, narcos, the generals leading that government potentially, and be prepared for those challenges and also the opportunities in a post-Chavez world.
Yeah. So, speaking of the opportunities, as I mentioned a moment ago, your former position at the Department of State is apparently now to be filled by a woman who has been serving in it on an acting basis, Roberta Jacobson. Tell us a bit about her, the prospects for her confirmation, and specifically whether in her present capacity she has been doing the sorts of thinking and planning and hard work that we talk about each week is needed on the part of the United States government, just as an example, planning for and trying to lay the groundwork for a happy post-Chavez Venezuela.
Well, frankly, it's really a mixed bag. Granted, she's only in there in an acting capacity, but the key word is acting, and what is she doing in terms of dealing with the narco state in Venezuela? And she's actually in charge and has been for years and the delivery of U.S. assistance to Mexico. She was responsible for the Mexico office for a good number of years. And so
She's a career civil servant, I understand, in the State Department.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Experienced diplomat, has served overseas, very well respected, a very tough interagency battler. The question is, how will she deal with the foes of the United States, and what will she do about Iran building a military facility in Iran? In Venezuela, mining uranium in Venezuela, and Ecuador as well. What will she do with Hezbollah and operatives who are operating in Latin America? All these things are happening, what is ostensibly on her watch. I gather that senators will ask what she's been doing up to now that merits her being confirmed for that job.
Yeah. Well, as you say, in a way, it's not simply a matter of speculating about what she will do. It's looking at the record to date. And while, as you know all too well, the position of an assistant secretary in the State Department is not all-powerful, but it does have considerable influence. And the question really recurs, what should senators who will be considering this nomination of Roberta Jacobson be looking for in terms of the sort of person they want going forward? Just take as an example, if you would, for the moment, let's just stick with the Venezuelan business. What, knowing very well both the capabilities and limitations of that office, having held it, Roger Noriega, what would you like to see her doing now, and what should senators be insisting be done if she is to be confirmed?
At the very least, we have to start treating Venezuela as a priority in terms of intelligence collection, because quite frankly, if what the bureaucrats there say is correct, they are flying blind about all of these threats, and it's pretty pathetic when outsiders seem to have more information about what's going on in Venezuela in terms of the threats that are metastasizing there than the U.S. government. So first and foremost, she needs to get ahead of that curve. And her predecessor, fellow Georgetown professor Arturo Valenzuela, really, I think, had an organizing principle of placating our enemies and ignoring our friends.
Or undermining them at worst. Yeah.
Exactly. You're exactly right to correct me, because countries like Colombia, he was practically hostile.
And Honduras absolutely was, right?
And the Democrats in Honduras were actively mugged by the indifference of this and wrongheadedness of our policy. So hopefully she will at least change reverse field on that and look for opportunities to help our friends, to reassure the Democrats in Venezuela particularly that we're not going to settle for a soft landing for Chavez's crony. I don't think it's too cynical to suggest that these folks might prefer a soft landing, a succession strategy with the Chavez regime, rather than insisting, really demanding that elections be held and the results of those elections be respected. Frankly, we can't even expect that, because conventional wisdom in Washington, frankly, is that the opposition is too weak or hapless or disorganized to deal with Chavismo. And in point of fact, they're unified. They have won a majority of the congressional elections just a year ago. And so they deserve respect. They're not asking for any help, but they at least don't sell them out and don't settle for a soft landing for Chavez's cronies.
Yeah, because it'll be a hard landing for our interests, that's for sure. Roger, in the remaining 2 minutes or so we have with you, two quick questions. You touched briefly a moment ago on Ecuador and its relationship with Iran. That's only one of the troubling indicators of where its President Correa is taking the country, a Chavismo protege and acolyte. What else is going on there that we should be aware of and concerned about?
Well, Correa is out of control, really, when it comes to freedom of expression and freedom of the press. He uses the courts there to attack his political opponents, who, if their voices are heard in the media, he'll do whatever he can to destroy television stations, radio stations, newspapers, by using these kangaroo courts that he controls. And he's another one of these caudillos who, you know, we've tried to placate. He threw our ambassador out, very respectable foreign service officer, about 4 or 5 months ago, and we go hat in hand to nominate someone else. He doesn't deserve to have a U.S. representative there, but we're in a big hurry to legitimize that regime, which is mugging its political opponents. Has no use for us, doesn't cooperate with us to fight drugs, and is doing business, probably illegal business, with Iran, helping it mine uranium and other strategic minerals in Ecuador. That's something we need to take very seriously.
You mentioned that it has a dollarized economy, so just about anything that it's doing with Iran would presumably come under our sanctions.
Exactly.
Very quickly, in the last minute, I had a chance to visit in Peru recently and have not had a chance to talk with you about it, but I was interested in your take on this. Many of the folks that I talked with there, Roger, were sort of holding their breath or maybe whistling past the graveyard about their newly elected president, Humala. In 45 seconds or so, what's your take on what he's doing so far?
Well, make no mistake about it. Humala is a Chavista. He's a former military officer who tried to a couple of rebellions against the democratically elected governments there, and I do not, frankly, have much confidence in his reassuring words. Chavez said he wasn't going to run for re-election, and that was, 13 years ago, and Mala just said that recently. He says he's going to respect the private economy, and frankly, he doesn't even understand the private economy. The institutions in Peru are too weak to hem in a caudillo, a strong man like Correa, and that's what worries me.
Yeah, worries me too. We'll be following it with you as ever, Roger Noriega. Thank you very much for joining us as always, and for the important perspective you're bringing to bear on a very strategically significant part of the world. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to talking with you soon. Next up, we'll be talking with Bill Gertz about what has happening inside the ring this week, including change of command of the top military officer of the United States of America. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Well, good morning and out to school.
Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with, you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are privileged to be each week by Bill Gertz, one of the preeminent, if not the preeminent, national security correspondent of our time. He is the national security editor of the Washington Times and the author of a superb must-read column called Inside the Ring, and we're going to go inside the ring with you, Bill. You have several important stories there. But before that, I want to get your reaction to news reports that one of the top Al-Qaeda operatives, Anwar al-Awlaki, apparently was taken out today by a drone strike in Yemen. What can you tell us about how it was accomplished, and what do you think it might mean for the war effort?
Well, it's a significant milestone. It looks like they were able to. It was a joint special operations CIA effort to target him. The last time they nearly got him was in May. This time, apparently, outside of in a remote province of northeastern province of Jaf in Yemen, and apparently they were also able to quickly confirm it. You know, there are a lot of times they do these strikes, but al-Awlaki is a major figure. He was the inspiration behind the Fort Hood shooting by Nidal Hassan, who self-radicalized army major who killed 13 people, and he also was directly linked to the attempted December 2009 underwear bomber who tried to blow up a Northwest Airlines flight to Detroit. So this is a major step forward. I mean, he's an American, which makes it a little different, but also it's a key in putting down a major mouthpiece and recruiter for Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I think an important, if perhaps not long-lived, but nonetheless important tactical victory. Which brings us to a related subject that I wanted to visit with you, Bill. You have written in Inside the Ring this week about a controversy that has been stimulated in part by the, well, parting shots, I guess you might say, of the outgoing chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen, United States Navy Admiral, who is retiring today. He told the United States Senate's Armed Services Committee last week that Pakistanis are all over the terrorist threat we're facing from something called the Haqqani Network. Tell us what that's about and the fight within the administration, of which it is evidently an important element.
Yeah, there's a major debate going on within the higher levels of the Obama administration over Pakistan. And the debate centers on the fact that the ISI intelligence service has been linked directly to coordinating a recent attack outside of Kabul and the U.S. embassy strike in Kabul. They were able to obtain very sensitive intelligence information indicating that the Haqqani network was in touch with elements of the ISI, and Admiral Mullen blasted him in Senate testimony. In response to this, the Washington Post this week had an alarming piece by quoting a senior Pentagon official as criticizing Mullen, again, probably taking a parting shot. He retires on Friday today. And this official said that the intelligence was not clear. And what I was able to learn from officials is that there's a debate between intelligence and State Department officials who want to drastically scale back drone strikes as a way to assuage Pakistan, and others, including Mullen and Panetta, who want to continue the high tempo and aggressive force. I think the Al-Awlaki drone strike is going to lend credence to their position.
Yeah, that's, of course, Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, in place at the moment. Bill, this is a very interesting, and nobody does a better job than you, Bill Gertz, of sort of ferreting out these stories of what's going on, as you say, inside the ring and more generally inside the government. What do you make of the fact that a senior Defense Department official, unnamed, would be telling the Washington Post something that is seemingly so far at odds with what both his boss, his or her boss, I guess I have to say, in the civilian side or in the military side, is saying and thinking about this need to maintain the pressure using these drones in Pakistan as part of an effort to defeat, among others, the Haqqani network?
Well, it's a guessing game as to who this official was. In working on my column item, I was able to get a very strong response from two of the Pentagon officials who said that Admiral Mullen stands by his report, and a second official questioned who this Pentagon official was. Most likely it's a Pentagon intelligence official because it reflects this intelligence view that the way to develop closer relations with the PACs is to basically appease them, and one way to do that would be by decreasing the drone strikes. But it's certainly got people wondering who was issuing such a vocal attack on the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and one of the centerpieces of the Obama administration's terrorism policy. And that raises the question about whether the left-wing liberals in the Obama administration are going to prevail and change that policy.
Right. You know, the point of this really is it's not just about sort of internecine inside the beltway skirmish. It comes down to fact, Bill Gertz. Do the Pakistanis actually exercise control over, not just support, not just provide safe haven to, but actually control one of the most terrifying, lethal, Islamist organizations on the planet today, namely this Haqqani network, or don't they? And to have this kind of seeming manipulation of the evidence by whether it's intelligence officials inside the Pentagon or elsewhere is I know, very troubling to you as it is to us. Bill, in the remaining couple of minutes we have, I want to try to do justice to some reporting you've also been doing in your Inside the Ring column about China. A couple of key pieces. You have talked there about the Taiwan aid package and how the Chinese have been responding to it, and whether the United States might try to now send more military equipment to our allies in free China. You've been talking about more evidence that's come to light about Chinese attacks, cyber attacks on Japanese military industrial enterprises, which may compromise both their hardware and perhaps ours. And you also have something that you published in the paper, front page story, about a Chinese think tank known as Kicker. Tell us about all three of these, if you can, quickly.
Sure. The first item is that the Obama administration and especially the Pentagon are watching closely to see how China reacts to the latest announcement of the arms sale, which was a $5.8 billion package to upgrade F-16s. And these officials are already planning to do, if the reaction is muted, which it is going to assume to be, they're going to vastly increase arms sales to Taiwan, including submarines, possibly new F-16s, which were passed over in this latest arms package, and also aircraft and naval visits, which the U.S. has been banned from doing those based on trying to avoid upsetting China. So that's a good possibility.
This seems to me to be an invitation, of course, to get a negative reaction from the Chinese, but we'll be watching that with you, Bill. Go ahead.
And I also highlighted a recent cyber attack that now is believed to have come from China on Japan's main defense contractor, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, and two other defense contractors. It appears that the Chinese were after missile technology and also aircraft technology that were in those computers. That's fairly alarming. And then last, I reported on this Chinese think tank called the China Institutes of Contemporary International Relations, which a recent CIA report identified as a major intelligence gathering arm of the Chinese KGB, the Ministry of State Security. And Joe Biden, when he was in China in August, met with the president of Kicker at a so-called roundtable, and he was one of numerous U.S. officials from across the government and defense department who have been meeting with this intelligence front and presumably being the target of Chinese disinformation.
Yeah, and presumably intelligence collection as well. Bill Gertz, thanks for these tremendously important stories that you're covering so closely. I know that you'll keep us apprised of them, as well as through your writing at the Washington Times. Inside the Ring, it's vital that you take this aboard, folks. Keep it up, Bill. We'll talk to you again next week, and we will talk to all of you,
I
hope, next week as well. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.